At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to be wrapping up our coverage of the Drukhari with a focus on some of like more of the sub-factions within them.
The cool parts.
Yeah, some of these are actually way better. Mandrakes. As always, please like and comment on the cast. The comments and likes really do help boost us up. We're in like the top leisure podcast on Spotify in over 6 countries. Half of them don't speak English, so that's kind of badass.
Which is cool because we're bad at speaking English.
It's impressive. Yeah, sorry guys in advance. It really does. When you guys do these things, it helps us broaden our audience and reach more people. I refuse to spend money like doing fake advertising and all this crap with us. So this is how we reach people.
We're weirdly against that.
Yeah.
It's not even like we're not doing it. We're kind of
like really against it. Like, yeah, I'm really against people. Like, I take a lot of pride if you go to our, at time of recording, we have 3,000 reviews. We're 4.9 stars. Every one of those reviews is real. And that's from you all. And I just honestly thank you for doing that because it makes me feel better that all of the achievements we have are real, not from.
Well, let's give a quick shout out because a lot of people have done us a lot of favors on Reddit and Facebook.
Yes.
Really pushing us out. And I do want to give a hearty thank you. That's.
Yeah, it's true.
I love it.
I see every now and then I'll see someone, I'll be on Reddit and I'll see someone comment, oh, the 40K Lorecast is great. And, I call you out, but it's just your Reddit username. So, but if you're the one who did it, thank you. Same with Facebook. We see people doing Facebook all the time. Thank you. It means a lot to us that you guys like what we're doing. So always here, we also promote our Discord because it's awesome. This Discord was created over a year ago. It's kind of a fun place people interact. The goal originally was just to give you guys a place to talk to us. And then it exploded beyond that, didn't it? Huh?
It doesn't seem that long. Time's meaningless for me. I'm old.
Yeah, it's only this is episode 62, so we're 10 episodes past 1 year. It's been great, but the Discord now is over actually 3,500 members at time of recording. A lot of weekly interaction, and it's turned into an incredibly positive community where you can, of course, you can still ask us questions and talk to us, but you can also talk to a lot of other like-minded people in what I consider a very healthy. Can't say safe space anymore, but a very healthy space. Everyone there seems to actually have everyone else's best interest at heart. Also, giant thank you out to Kevin and the other mods. Other mods, I'm learning your names. Don't worry.
I'll learn them and tell John. Don't worry.
Exactly. That's how this works. But you guys have really made this thing a great piece. And so for anyone who's listening to this and is looking for a place to go and spend some time talking about 40K, learning more about 40K, from anything from gameplay to lore to just memes, come join. Totally free. We get nothing out of it other than just joy. So come on in. Also, in the show notes for the cast, you can see a couple links. One is to the Discord. Another one is to our new webpage, the 40klorecast.com. Well, the new version of a ugly old webpage.
I told you, purple on pink wasn't a good idea.
I made it in the morning while drinking coffee on a Saturday. I probably should put more effort in. Also, a link to our Patreon for those of you who want to support us and help us out, get more, more equipment, more this. On the last cast, you heard me call out Brad for constantly making the noise of his soda can hitting the table. And he's now like overly protective as he lowers it down. It's
with my weird shaky hands.
Yeah, too. It's just like, I don't want this to bang on the table because John called me out for it because John doesn't listen to it when he edits it. Anyway, it's also helped us do things like the Patreon's helped us do things like hire an audio engineer, buy new equipment, improve sound dampening, all those things to overall make the cast sound better. So to those of you who've helped out so far, thank you. For those of you who are going to help us out in the future, also thank you. Lastly, of course, though, Brad coaches 40K. 30 years of playing, over a decade of coaching experience. Anyone who's looking to play this game at kind of a higher level, and higher level can be, I've never played it before. Yeah. So playing it once would be a higher level. Brad has coaching available for that. He does take a lot of pride in it. I mean, as much as, you know, sometimes I do this and I kind of shit talk him while we're doing this. But the truth of the matter is, I'm actually very proud of what he does too. He takes a lot of pride in it. He enjoys helping people get better at the game because he doesn't really want, his goal is to make it so that you don't have to kick yourself for making a stupid mistake, and lets you actually, that way you can actually just enjoy the game. With that, you can either go to our website and click a link to find him. You can go to our Discord and click a link to find him. Or you can email him at
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
And for those of you who are writing that down to steal his identity, get in line.
I mean, don't bother.
there's so much spam. All right. Anyway, back to the Drukhari. And let's just dive right in. So on the last cast, we covered in depth the main faction of the Drukhari, which are the Cabals. The Cabals are the ruling party of the Drukhari, for lack of a better phrase. But there's other key groups within the Drukhari. These ones may not like challenge the Cabals for power, but they play a critical role in how much power those people have. And with their backing and their forces, they actually can swing the tides of power from the dark
city. You have the power if you have the cult and the Cabal, or if you have the cult and the Coven's backing.
You can go pretty far.
Yeah.
Exactly. So let's start with the first ones, which are the witch cults, or as I call them, the Cirque du Soleil of murder.
I mean, you're not wrong.
That's really all that they are.
I mean, it's pretty goddamn cool, though.
Oh, they're amazing. They're amazing. So,
you know, I'm going to set this up first off with what a lot of times they look like, because this is one of the most terrifying things in 40K. You're in, we're 40, I don't even know the exact year anymore. We're 40 plus thousand years.
We're in the 41s. Yeah. We're in the 41s now.
But you're going in with your armored, you've got your huge gun, auto targets. You've got a foot of ceramide armor around you. And then you've got a girl with a top knot wearing a bikini and high boots doing backflips, charging at you with what looks to be a short dagger. And you go, something is wrong now.
And then you get poisoned.
And then you get poisoned and stabbed and don't understand what happened. That has to be disheartening to the warriors in the 41st millennium. Standing there going, did they just not wear armor at all? Like, you're like, no, they're coming. Also, they're really fast.
Yeah. I mean, orcs don't wear armor either, though. Let's not
undermine. Well, they think they are.
That's a good point. They don't think the bullets can hit them, and the bullets just don't hit them like a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, fair point. So witch cults, they're a leavover from the pleasure cults. So post-pleasure cult, people kind of went a couple different routes within it. The most normal of the pleasure cults were the Cabals, what became the Cabalite warriors. These are people who enjoy inflicting pain on others, but they do it, via murder, effectively.
Well, one of the biggest things with that, it's not just that they take pleasure in the dominance over another because of their skill.
Yeah.
So they try to raise their skill levels to just unworldly. They're magic, basically.
What the witch cults did was a little bit different. The witch cults, their joy and their power come from the final strike. And what they love to do is actually kind of build a crescendo of movement until they deliver their final blow. And witch cults, so for example, they call it the artistic kill. What they love to do is like lots of small wounds, onto somebody until at the end they deliver the killing blow. Well,
it's because they want to savor their suffering.
Yeah.
But it's not even just their suffering. They want to instill despair at the fact that you're so much, there's nothing you can do. It's inevitable.
Yeah. It's to torment their victim. Okay. And that by tormenting their victim, it's at the very end they get even more release of this energy. So to Brad's point, from a fighting style, they wear skin-tight clothing. It's basically, in the earlier models, there were a couple of them that were a girl in bikini with knee-high boots, and then GW realized that's a bit much, and then flipped it over. It was just basically skin-tight clothing. I will say there are male witches. We'll get to them in a little bit. They just they serve a little bit different purpose. And at first sounds kind of cool, and then you realize, no, it's actually horrible. But anyway, their whole fighting style is just speed. they
speed. We got to go speed and precision.
Yeah, exactly. They're in and out.
They have otherworldly precision on their strikes.
Yeah, the irony is the witches probably could kill their victims in a quarter of the time that it takes.
I don't even,
but they need to create the agony. That's true. Yeah, it's massively less, and they need to create the agony. Actually, let's actually jump into the male fighters real quick because it actually is funny. There are male members of the witch cults. This is just a fun story I like, and they're there for breeding purposes.
I just want to say, yeah, sure, they're there.
Yeah. But I firmly believe that, you know, they're there for breeding, which people are like, ha ha, it'd be pretty cool. This is 100% praying mantis style. I guarantee you they all get murdered and tortured to death.
There's a lot of male hellions in the models.
Yeah. With hellions and beastmasters. Those are the two groups they work.
You leave. You don't want to get murdered.
Because you're getting murdered. That's the whole point. Like, your options are, oh, you could be, we're going to use you for breeding. Cool. What happens after? Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
How come I never see anyone leave the concubine chamber? Any male ever leave it afterwards? Again, that's not important.
You should have went. You'd see him if you went out the trash disposal.
Yeah. check the drain.
Yeah, there he is.
Ugh. So to add the thing about the witches is the main thing for them is to instill fear and despair in their opposition. And they do this not so much by having a scary look, like they're not wearing like creepy masks or any of those things. They do it by just making it so your death feels inevitable, but not guaranteed, so that you always keep fighting because you believe you could get them. And like, so for example, they wear no armor. They're carrying some of them use whips, but a lot of them carry a small blade and a pistol. And even those whips, by the way, are designed just to make.
Well, the pistols aren't even used in the arenas, which we'll go into later.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole thing is that with the witches, it's to create this. So you look at them and you think to yourself, all I have to do is just hit them once. If I just hit them once, then I'll win and they'll die. And so you always have this piece of hope that they take away from you at the very last strike, turning your hope into despair. One other note about the witches I like to point out is that they're not looking for a fair fight. You know, a follower of Khorne, for example, takes joy in defeating an equal or better opponent.
They want the other glory, you know, for Khorne.
Exactly. Eldar is the same way. Eldar just, you know, they want to, Eldar want the battle just over. Their whole thing is
they don't want to lose anybody. That's their whole thing.
Yeah. Let me say externally. The Eldar are the opposite of this, where the Eldar just don't want to die. So they're going to come in. If they see an opponent, snuff them. That's it. We're done. The witch cults are the kind of in between the two of them. They want to extend the battle out for this fear, but they also don't want to die. So they tend to only pick opponents they can easily beat. Like, a regular member of the witch cult would probably never take on a space marine in combat. Could they defeat them? Maybe. But it's not a fight they would want, because the space marine would never be fearful of them.
There is exceptions to that rule in the top tops.
Well, yeah, succubus, I'm a regular witch cult. Yeah. You're right. You go to like a really high-end witch. But again, it's because the thing about witch cult is they always punch down. That's the way to think about it. They always fight someone who they know they can defeat, because that creates more despair in the opponent. They don't want an opponent who thinks they have the upper hand to get excited. They want an opponent to just constantly be lashing towards them to not die. And before any of you get upset, yeah, Lilith Hesperex did one single-handed a Chaos Lord, but it's Lilith and duh.
They take, I think that sometimes they'll, in the arena,
mm-hmm.
they'll take on challenges. I think that when they go on real raids and stuff like that.
But even those challenges, it's a little bit different of a setup, but even we talk about challenges. There are the rare ones in the arena, and we're going to cover the arena at the end of the cast. We'll dive more deeply into it. But in that scenario, there are the who is the best, like, title fight. But a lot more of it is actually, they're going to take on 20 beasts or 30, former colony soldiers type things. It's always designed for the witch to have the upper hand, because no one's, actually, let's talk about the arenas. You know, let's talk about the arenas. It'd be easier to explain once we explain what an arena is. So, the arenas are one of the really key parts in all Drukhari lore. Yunnari. When we talk about Yunnari, the arena are a massive part of that.
But they're so awesome.
They are. And
the arena itself, it could be, you got to remember, we're talking about fighting in the sky, on the ground, everywhere. These are the Colosseum times 1,000.
Yeah, and let's spend some time on that. So each Cabal owns a section of the Dark City, mm-hmm. right? And one of the main things they will build in these dark cities are these giant arenas. And this is because a Cabal is, if a Cabal wants to gain power, it's not just the killing of the other groups, but you also have to, you know, grow the size of your Cabal. The more powerful, the more successful you are, the more people will join you. So they also build, as we said in the last cast, they're still Eldar. They build artistic things. So each witch cult has an arena that they fight in, and each of these arenas are built primarily by the Cabals.
They're funded by the Cabals. Almost 100%.
Yeah.
Because the witches themselves become, they have patrons.
Yeah.
They're funded by patrons, and then they are, well, we'll go into the covens. They're juiced up by.
Yeah, they're juiced up too, very heavily.
But like, it's a big deal in this because that's just what they do. And they're, this isn't always, but to the most part, they're semi outside of all the intrigue unless it forwards their purposes.
Very much so. And see, so the arenas themselves, these are, you know, at their core, they were written by GW to be like the gladiatorial arenas of the Romans.
Yeah.
But turn up to a million.
Because yeah,
you've got so like
crazy.
I mean, it's cartoonish. You've got spinning blades that are both fixed in place somewhere, but also ones that just jump out of nowhere. They have zero gravity wells. So all of a sudden the combatants can find themselves either unknowingly end up in one, or they can actually fight in zero gravity to put on a cool display.
In an arena, they will have ships.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we'll get there. But you also get random beasts just
roaming around, by the way.
Yeah. They're just random like warp beasts wandering around it. And to Brad's point, the combat's also not just on the ground. You know, they fight in the sky. They've got jet bikes that are shooting around. We've got Hellions who are sitting on freaking like flying hoverboards ripping through the sky. Even inside the stands, they'll actually fight inside the stands. So when you attend these events, the air becomes thick with like blood because it's coming from everywhere. Blood, the screams of those dying just echoes.
And there's something happening everywhere you look.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's such a big deal. And this is why it's a big deal for the witches to show themselves to be not just, I can kill people. Cool. Everybody can kill
people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Neat.
Yeah, you have to be, your theatrical ability of killing has to be second to none, because also there's a billion different things going on. If you want to have anybody put their eyes to you, draw money to your cult, get those people that give you money.
And one of the cool things about these arenas, though, is they also echo inside them all of the screams and the agony. And what happens is all of the, as we said before, the Drukhari draw power from pain. Those in the audience actually start gaining power. So these arenas serve a lot of purposes, not the least of which is that if you attend the arena games and you're Drukhari, you actually will just power up sitting there.
Well, it's not even just powering up. You don't die.
Right.
You don't also, yes, you're powering up, but the best thing is you're not withering away. You're also
covering away. Yeah. The Slaanesh pull. These arenas, thousands, millions, we don't know how many people sit there, all just sit and absorb.
From some of the stories, they have to be seating a million people. Because these are otherworldly,
they're
just hugely big.
And this piece, though, this absorption is one of the main reasons the Cabals build them, too, is for the Archons. Because as we said, everyone, no matter who you are, have to take in this power from pain. An Archon is the most... I mean, I would say murderable. No one is more in danger in the Dark City than actually an Archon. I would actually argue slaves, the slaves of the Drukhari are safer than the Archons are.
No one's actively trying to kill them.
That's the thing.
And every second of every day.
And everyone is trying to kill them every single day. So the Archons need a way to gain the power from pain without exposing themselves. And that's what the arenas do. They can sit in the arena and theoretically... safely absorb all this pain. Now, there is a story that will come up later of that not going right. Great. for one of them. One of the key pieces about witches, and we hinted to it earlier, are their combat drugs. Again, 1/8 edition back. Really 1/8 edition back. Did everyone cheat with it? Yeah, they did. We both know they did. So in 8th edition, people who don't know, in the 8th edition of this game, when you put your Drukhari on the board, if you ran witches, you could either pick or roll dice for certain combat drugs.
You could roll two dice or pick one.
Or pick one.
Which I always picked one.
Of course, because everyone picked one, because you could get the
best one.
Some of them were garbage. But the issue is that people wouldn't write it down, and you'd notice all of a sudden their witches seem to always have the best combat drug for whatever scenario
Yeah,
so anyway, but it was a really good thing, and it was incredibly fluffy for the rules, because that's the way the witches are supposed to work, is the witches work with the covens to figure out a way to make themselves even better.
Now, I got to really stress this one, because we're not talking like, hey, I took some adrenaline, this guy coked up. No, this is magic exists. These guys are effectively giving you magic powder that you take that makes it seem that bullets are showing.
Let me say even better. Yeah. You're taking, because we talked about this with Eldar. Eldar are some of the fastest and most accurate beings in the galaxy. And they're taking these combat drugs, make them even faster and more capable. I mean, the truth is the rules on the tabletop can never do the lore justice, because in theory, a witch on a combat drug that would make them more accurate could never miss. That's what they would never miss, is that you cannot roll a one effectively. These combat drugs make them faster, hit harder, actually even take more damage, or just avoid more things altogether. They were incredible. And the idea of the drugs was to actually less in the arena was to make them more entertaining. So you would actually be able to take a witch and make her even faster to fight maybe like a big hulking opponent. So they could, you know, be stabbing them 1,000 times.
And take their time killing it.
Mm-hmm.
While effectively not being in danger, because they're so much faster than the opponent.
That's why. But it would put on an incredible display as like the Hulk, you know, is fighting a like tiny little witch, but she's able to jump all over him and put in literal death by 1,000 cuts. Like, that's what they were trying to do with them. So the witches are, in theory, again, not a tabletop, some of the most like blender level fighters.
I mean, the suckiest in 8th edition was 10 attacks.
Was it 8th edition or was that 9th?
Both.
Oh, was it? Okay. All right, fine. Yeah. Succubus was cool.
Yeah.
Succubus. They've always been.
The powers per cull.
Yeah.
That's one time in the game that it tried to. You know what I mean?
8th was close. 8th did the best job of putting the Drukhari on the board, in my mind. Everything else since then has been, they've struggled a little bit with kind of how to make it worth that. And some of the earlier stuff was still like, should we talk about, now we'll talk about Razor Ring Flocks later. So one thing that we should talk about before we move on from the witch cult is that the majority of the time they spend fighting in the arenas, but not all of it. They also take part in the real space raids.
Well, they get hired for these.
Sometimes.
Well, yeah, true.
That's
true,
the thing. So the thing is that in order for the arenas to function, they have to have people to fight. And we'll talk later into how some of them come into the play. But the real space is a key spot of this, where they will take captives from real space raids, oftentimes like animals, also like beasts, those types of
monsters,
Tyranids.
It's a big thing, because
it's Tyranids. We
talked about this in the last cast, where I had mentioned that the Cabals have to plan so well, because sure, this is what your plan is, but for instance, the witches just one decided they want to show how awesome they are in the five instead of the four backflips, but also they need to capture some cool shit to fight in the arena. So their plan might be slightly off your plan.
This is the issue with the witches, though, is that to Brad's point, witches, it's not that they end up in kind of like a blood rage per se when they do some of these raids.
Depending on the drug.
But they don't not end up in that. So sometimes the raids with the witches don't quite go to plan, in that a bunch of witches start, I gotta be careful how I pronounce that quickly. They start attacking, and the Archon doesn't feel like they're following his plan, so he tells them to stop, and then the Cabal needs a new Archon.
Yeah. Because then a giant squad of witches descends,
slaughters him. Yeah, and then
they're also all jacked up a Mountain Dew chip. Yeah. You're not stopping that.
So from the witches, we'll jump over the covens. And we're going to get back to witches in a little bit. We're kind of bounced back and forth a little bit. But the covens.
This is the remember the crazy guys we were talking about that hid from Eldar society because they thought that fish hooks and eyeballs were too lame. These are the guys that formed the covens. You took the weirdest guys doing the weirdest shit and went, let's turn that up to 11, bro.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So the covens are effectively evil scientists who live in the below the surface of Kamara.
I feel like you're not selling it on the evil.
Well, no, let's.
There's like, they're evil scientists where evil is in all caps, bold.
Yeah, let's have some fun with them. So I'm going to talk about the coven from a history standpoint. So the pleasure cults are forming. When they did, they didn't really know what they were doing. They discovered that there's a joy in pleasure from harming others, but it was kind of fleeting and random. But the Eldar, because of who they are very OCD. And once they find a craft to perform, they will perfect it. Be it pottery.
No matter how long it takes.
Yeah, be it pottery or murder torture. And the challenge, though, is that they needed a place to do this kind of out of sight. So these Eldar, who later became known as the flesh crafters, not in a good way, moved into the Webway, and they built these giant laboratories, like the most underground part of the Dark City. Because this is before they were doing this, before the Eldar nobles were into it. So this was really as close to outlawed as you could get. So they were hidden away in these dark corners.
For a long time.
Yeah, thousands of years. And what they did was they began to perfect torture and pain. And it was their findings on torture and pain that magnified the emotion reaction that allowed the recipe to be spread. And now that this is what converted so much of the Eldar, like nobility and culture, to this style.
They were not wholly responsible for the fall, but they're close.
They're the reason behind it. They're like the Eldar themselves are the reason behind the fall, but without the flesh crafters, they would have never reached
this because they wouldn't have got the reward that they got.
They may have bailed on it effectively because it was these monstrosities that did it. So after the fall, though, the next problem comes into play because now we need soul energy from our victims. And again, you know, witch cults and cabals, they could create suffering, but they couldn't generate that much power.
They couldn't create a symphony of suffering.
Yeah. These flesh crafters began working again to perfect the craft. How do we get the maximum amount of torment while basically per life? So how do we extend their lives to the victims to get a maximum output of power? And their skills, by the way, are insane. Like the one of my favorite stories is there's a laboratory where there is a human whose skin, muscles, nervous system, and skeleton are in 4 different displays, and the person is completely alive. And they can feel it.
I'm going to my favorite because I know that one.
Yeah.
My favorite's the chair. A rival of the homunculus bends the skin. He's still he's a sentient chair, but feels all of the pain from the breaking and molding, making him a chair.
Yeah.
He's aware of his surroundings and always in incalculable pain. And you're like, you guys have problems.
Oh, they're so messed up. If you were to walk, I mean, the other example someone I read somewhere was, if you were to walk into the workshop of a homunculi, the screams of their victims would actually drop you. Is so the pain and suffering that's happening in there would put most of them to their knee. Obviously, a Drukhari who walks in there suddenly powers up. Like, you just start leveling up just by entering it. So for this reason, their locations and access are very closely guarded secrets. You don't get to wander into a homunculus laboratory.
You could, but it's going to go bad for you.
Yeah, you're about to.
You were probably led there. Let's be honest.
You didn't open the wrong door. Oh, again, excuse me.
To be fair.
Yeah.
You're like, wait a minute. I don't think I found this place. I feel like I might have been allowed to lead me here.
And this is why, much like the witches, the covens, which the homunculi are part of, they tend to be aligned with a cabal. And they trade the cabal, you know, a lot of this power, this resources, all these things. And the cabal gives them beings to torture, obviously. And they do kind of protect them, because the issue is that the covens,
they're hated because they do bad.
And they do it to Drukhari as well.
A lot. The majority of the bad things they do are to other Drukhari.
So they've got, there's some people with some vendettas.
Also, don't go a heavy night of drinking, because you're going to end up in a bad place.
So let's talk about like what a coven brings to the table. Cause it's an area that like, and everyone plays. So I play Drukhari, Brad, Lysidra, we all play Drukhari differently. I actually primarily play Cabal Drukhari. I have some witches. I only own like 60 witches, which I know only isn't like much, but
yeah, but I play mostly witches, but
yeah,
I play covens.
I don't play a lot of covens. I have some Talos, but that's about it.
The biggest thing with the covens, what they provide augmentation to your regular warriors, but the biggest thing is they provide weaponry.
Yeah. They are masters of the living flesh. And so they know how to preserve it. They know how to destroy it. As we talked last time to Brad's great joy, poison weapons. All the poison weapons come from the covens, but also blades, clothing. All of this is made within the covens in order to give things. Like if you look at witches, some witches, and actually especially like cabal armor, will have random blades on it in random places. Well, also, this is from the covens to help them create even more pain while they're fighting.
And the thing is that especially the witches' outfits, which are effectively skin-tight synth suits, basically, that even though they look like you're wearing new armor, they put drugs into your system.
All the combat drugs are made by the covens.
100% on that. And they have interactive. They're almost wearing like a black carapace as their armor.
You
know what I mean? It's just a skin-tight suit that is, of course,
covered in the Sister's Cast. The black carapace does nothing.
Exactly. But I'm saying, they're coated with it. It does everything kind of thing. They go nuts on this stuff. I mean, then we'll go into.
Let's talk about the next one is troops. And so this is where on the tabletop, you are probably most noticeable. So they don't just destroy life. They can kind of create it, sort of. And by create it, I mean, it's just evil versions of.
Also, a lot of these people are supposed to be the guys who are like, hey, can I learn your craft? And they go, no problem. And then all of a sudden you have stuff attached.
Yeah. So the first group that they make are racks.
They're the basics.
It's a servitor. It's a bipedal being, usually was actually a Drukhari originally, where the helmet gets, their head gets a special helmet on them that links them to the homunculi. So they're completely servants of the homunculi. And then sometimes they might cut their arms off and put blades on or whips on, those kinds of things. But the purpose of the rack is really twofold. Primarily, it's like servitor. They're there to do the bidding of the homunculi, because the homunculi don't do manual labor. They, you know, in fact, the homunculi actually hover. I should have mentioned that they actually hover around because they don't want to be bothered with walking because it's too much work. So anything that has to be picked up, moved, anything, that's done by a rack. And racks can be racks have a long history of potential sources. They can just be random thing that's turned into a rack. They can also be, to Brad's point about the chair, someone that the homunculi personally disliked, and then he'll turn you into a rack to then have you just perform a painful, horrifying task, like walk across fire until you melt.
Yeah.
because that's
they and you can't bored. Do anything about it.
Yeah, they're very similar to AdMech in that regard. just very, very similar. The only thing that's interesting about racks is that they can serve in combat, and all the homunculi units have one thing in common. They're not particularly fast. For Eldar, they're
slow. For Eldar, they're slow, but for other people,
they're still pretty quick. What makes them different is that all of the augmentations, because it's mostly about combat drugs, it's flesh crafting.
They have actual, effectively, mad scientist vial packs on all of them.
Yeah. Are they T4 now? They were T4. Yes, they're T4. So they're the same toughness as a space marine, but they also have what's called a feel no pain. So they actually ignore damage. And in this case, it makes sense that they have it because they have all these drugs in there. I'm not even sure if they still have a functioning limbic system. So you shoot them and they may just not feel it.
Yep.
Their main role though, from a combat standpoint, is usually at the end of a raid. They're used to corral victims and load them into things because it's a rack. They're kind of nasty and they're very strong and they're unpleasant.
However, they're not as unpleasant as grotesques.
Oh, well, grotesques are a lot more funny. So grotesques are a faster version of Frankenstein's monster.
Fast, slightly.
Yeah.
Slightly just a weird.
Also note, not Frankenstein. Frankenstein's a doctor. And actually, if you read the book, the doctor's the monster. Frankenstein's monster is actually not a bad thing. So good book. Anyway, those of you who've read it probably just cheered as I said that. Those of you who haven't are like, yeah, I've heard people make this complaint before. Shut up. I want to hear it again. So fair enough. Grotesques are, so first they're basically lobotomized the way servitors are. So they just obey a command.
Yeah. But the next step is pretty crazy because they fill them full of growth. They basically are roided up.
But it's roided up the same way Space Marines are, where it's not just like I'm stronger. I'm actually building new muscles that weren't
they look there like, they look like Abomination from Marvel.
Yeah. Don't imply IP violation on GW.
My bad.
They would never do such a thing. All of these are brand new ideas.
They are 100% Abomination. Yeah,
it's just that unfortunately, who's the guy who wrote Dune? He had a time machine. Anyway, so he actually came to the future and saw these things and then went back to write Dune. So the thing about Rax is that their skeletons are also augmented to massively increase their size. And then their limbs are replaced with claws, guns, blades.
When we say massively, these are 4 to 5 times as big as an Eldar. Not just straight tall, but in mass.
Yeah. By the way, they are literally larger than a custode.
First of the day.
Well, that was more like on the tabletop, they're also larger than a custode, but that's not saying much, as we discussed during custodes, that for some reason they're the exact same size as Space Marines. They're used a little bit. Now, a grotesque's purpose is kind of a bit more, it's like the inverse of the rack. The rack's main purpose is actually to work in the laboratory and do the bidding of the homunculi.
The grotesque
can do that, but they're primarily used for
to war. Go to war. Yeah, they're going to kill shit.
Yeah, but they're even nastier than the Rax, because not only are they incredibly tough and immune to pain, they actually heal in combat. They used to regenerate. Nothing they do anymore, do they?
No, they have just that they're feeling pain. So they can just go back to their, and they have wild regeneration. I mean, if you just don't straight kill these guys.
Yeah.
In this is lore. Not, it's been weird, different in the games.
Games moved around a little
over the years. Yeah. But in the lore, if you cut one of these guys in half and he's not wholly dead, you better not leave him alone because he'll be okay soon.
Yeah. They would just reform back up like T-1000 style.
Yep.
And then come back up. So yeah, these things are, I actually don't like the model, but I love the lore on them.
I didn't even know it's a real model.
One uses a real model.
I was going to say, I actually, it was in a tournament and I grabbed a guy's model and I go, what is this? A converted guy? He goes, that's the actual grotesque model. And I went, oh, I've never actually seen the actual grotesque model.
Yeah, actually, the actual grotesque model is just it's not easy to paint, to be perfectly honest. And the look is okay. And there's some, it's like Beasts of Nurgle. There's some amazing conversions that exist out there.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about the last and my actual favorite of all the things that the homunculi make.
Because of the fact.
Pain engines.
Their pain engines put the sisters' pain engines to shame.
Well, because they're different. The sisters' pain engines meant to be a punishment. this thing creates pain. And, oh, all right, so let's have some fun with these things. It was originally made, to Brad's point, it was the ultimate torture device, but it wasn't meant, whereas the sister's pain engines to help you repent. No. The homunculi was not about that. It was just like, I'm bored and I don't like this person.
So anyway, I'm going to the drawing board to figure out how bad I can make things suck for you.
Well, and so the stories on these guys are funny though. So what they would do originally is the homunculi would take a being and they would just hack their arms off, their arms and legs off, and then place them in this like vessel, almost like an iron lung type setup. And this thing would just keep them alive while making them feel all the pain of having their limbs chopped off. And it was great. It was just generate. These things would just, they were like little battery packs for power from pain. They would just generate. And you could just stand next to them and they'd go. The problem is that homunculi are effectively immortal. And they, over time, would build up enough enemies that they would have so many of these sitting around. It actually started taking up too much space in the laboratory. That's a real story. They got to the point where there are too many of these things sitting around the lab.
Yeah, so I thought they were inefficient enough.
Yeah, so I got to do something with it. So then they decided to just, I don't know, turn them into weapons of war. So they shoved an anti-grav harness on them because they had no legs. They could fly around. And then they put a weird helmet on them, the same way that the racks and the grotesques use, so they could just order them. And then they put the worst parts, which are their arms. Which are the siphons.
This is so crazy.
Yeah.
They literally want to take all the bio. They tiered it up here.
Yeah, it's the same material. These siphons, they use them. They basically float over to a dead body and then suck all the juice and being out of them to bring back to the coven for testing.
Well, this is the crazy part is... that they're not just, unlike the Tyranids, who only are just taking your bodies and everything else with them, these guys will take your soul with them.
Yeah. I mean, so, but with Talos, the reason I love Talos, first off, I think the model is insanely cool looking. It's a great model. They're fun to paint. They look amazing. Some of the better models I have, actually have my collection. But in the battle, the Talos will actually lead the charge because on, you know, their two hands will have anything from, you know, a chain, it's not even a real chain fist, it's a fist with chains on it, blades, liquefier guns. They have tails that shoot everything from poison to dark lances.
The injector guns and everything else.
They're insane. So they'll blender the opponent. But then when the battle's over, they hover back over the battlefield, just sucking up all the dead bodies to bring back.
You need a lot of raw materials. You're going to be a homunculi. Yeah.
However, of all the things the homunculi do, my favorite one is the immortality that they are able to do. And this is super cool. So we talked before about the power from pain. We said it like nonstop, but it is like the core thing of Drukhari. So when Drukhari is around pain and suffering, they get faster, stronger, and more. Homunculi discovered that's actually just scratching the surface. So in each laboratory, if you walk into a homunculi laboratory, which I strongly recommend you don't do unless you're an Archon.
Yeah.
Even then, it's like, sure you have.
Have you paid the coven lately? Yeah,
make sure you have bodyguards with you. There's a central like workstation, like a big, you know, just big table that they're working on. But above it is it's a bunch of tubes that just kind of hang over.
Comical. Evil science, mad scientist. Oh,
these things are cool as hell. And I'll actually be honest. In Rogue Trader, this is in Rogue Trader. They don't explain all this. I'm saying, but there was a homunculus laboratory you can see. So inside of all these tubes that hang over the workstation are important dead Drukhari who've died in battle in one way or another. Now dead, we're actually going to go with mostly dead.
Oh, you did watch the Princess Bride.
Uh huh. Because, you know, they do have a true love for murder. Or is it two blades? I'm not a witch, I'm your wife. Sorry, literally watched it last night, and it's so good. Every time I watch Princess Bride, I'm just a happier person. Anyway, so the homunculi have discovered, side note there, that with enough pain and suffering and energy, Drukhari can be brought back to life. Cool thing on this, it's not just brought back to life, it's actually reformed. They can actually regenerate back to their original form.
Yeah, they fifth element.
Yeah. because someone watched Fifth Element. Look at this. We're just going to go all movies here. I haven't done, I don't know where we're going to drop in a Monty Python, but I guarantee you it's coming. So, yeah.
And let's talk about this, because if you have a homuncula in your service,
you're immortal.
You legitimately buy a contract with them that they can reform you. Now, some of these homuncula have done that without the Archons' express written permission.
My guess is once the Archon's dead, it's probably over. But it's more that piece of, if I'm an Archon and like my lead succubus dies in battle against another
army. Just bring him back.
Yeah, I'll bring her back. Or if I do have a good general. Now, Drukhari are pretty mean about losing, but the idea is that you can bring back key members, and here we go. So this is such a powerhouse, and leads us into kind of what I think is one of the most important parts of understanding Drukhari is the last thing that Covens do, which is manage the cloning operations.
Well, without them, we would probably just, the Drukhari would not have enough people to do all these wars.
And this is an interesting one. And again, I am open about getting things wrong, but I am not aware of it ever being mentioned that the Eldar, how the Eldar are even still reproducing. I'm talking about the real Eldar. I'm not sure if Craft World Eldar are still reproducing.
I mean, Exonite Worlds are.
Okay, so that's about it. But in the Craft Worlds?
Yeah, they have children, so.
I guess it's possible. So yeah. with Drukhari, they actually have a full-blown operation, which is why the Drukhari are potentially, people have made comments there may be more Drukhari than there are Imperial citizens, which I disagree with. No. There are more than there are Tau. That's not saying much. There's not a lot of Tau.
I love the end to put the dig in.
Yeah, but it's not me shit talking to Tau. Just true. Like that's
what not many.
We'll cover in the Tau cast. There's not a lot of Tau. There are more Drukhari than there are Tau. There's probably more orcs than Drukhari, but maybe. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's that many of them. So the Drukhari, just quick side note here, do two things. They do have a traditional method, like normal birth, although they're not mammals. I'm not how exactly sure how this works. Ones who are born the regular way are called Drukhari Trueborn. So if you ever see,
and it's a big deal because they are considered an uppercase.
Yeah, sure. Well, they consider themselves that.
They get better equipment. How about that?
Yeah, they do. Not until this edition.
No, they had them before. Not neat. Trueborn were allowed to get more special weapons.
When? In which editions?
All of them.
Not eighth. Not seventh. Yeah, that's what I'm telling you. It's only a Trueborn bounce in and out of.
I was just debating on that.
Yeah, they just don't. My point is, Trueborn weren't in a lot of the game.
They didn't exist.
Yeah, when they're in the game, they're better. But when I think it was ninth edition is where
that's where you get all the
stupid boats of Dark Lances where everyone had to go, the Dark Lance. I don't know any of those. But the vast majority of Drukhari are that grown underneath the city by the homunculi. And this is why, again, the Drukhari are technically a thriving race. They're not a dying race.
It's so funny because they're technically thriving, but they're also technically withering. Well,
yeah, they're having their souls eaten. But if you think, the idea is that the Craft World Eldar are every minute of every day, they are reducing in total number because they don't have a way to quickly replicate. No. Because I guess the same way that the Craft World didn't share the spirit stones with the Drukhari, the Drukhari didn't share back the whole cloning operation thing, which would be pretty helpful for the Eldar. Basically, as long as there are enough souls that they can capture and torture, the Drukhari expand infinitely.
Yeah, you can cause enough suffering.
Because then you can feed enough all the souls of the Drukhari in the, because the Webway itself is infinite too, so there's no limitation on how many of them there can be.
The real question, and this is a thing that they don't really answer in the lore, is how fast is the withering in real space?
Yeah, you're right. We have no idea. I mean, it's obviously pretty quick because they don't stay.
Time.
Yeah, they do not spend
because time in one of the spins. Here's the Brad lore. I think it's so fast, which is I can't imagine that they wouldn't conquer and cause suffering in the real space if they could.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, because there's no reason why they wouldn't build like a torture factory in real space.
Right.
But the fact they don't is because it means that they couldn't get enough energy out of the torture factory.
Right. They would be, they'd have a hard time just remaining status quo.
Yeah. Also, I do think that Slaanesh knows where they are too. Is the other piece too? Is that even if she's not,
will you show up on the radar immediately?
Yeah, she just like get them, and now there's oh good, you know, we're under attack.
Which is also my second question on that. I'm going to throw this out to everybody listening. As far as you, 40K lore aficionados, could Slaanesh be due to her connection, not only know where they are but show up because you have to be, you know, summoned in.
What do you mean?
The Dark Eldar in the game always, even fantasy and this, have a stronger connection with their cults of Slaanesh and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would she be able to be pulled into, not her, the god specifically.
Oh, yeah. I thought you meant the god specifically.
No, the demons. No. The just demons. No, that's just something to be the thought of.
Fair enough. I will say that there is a question I do have of, if the Covens are in charge of growing all of the Vat Drukhari, how many of them just don't make it to the official count?
Oh, yeah.
Because now they're wrecks and grotesques and body parts for
well, the Covens fun experiment. Are wildly, extremely powerful. And I do think that they are the real power behind a lot of this, that the Cabal smashes down frequently.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the Cabals are routinely having to cull the horde around the Covens because they would get, I mean, a homunculi with a very large force of grotesques and pain engines would be a big problem.
Yeah. You need to set them up quite frequently. And they have in some of the stories where they just like, put them in harm's way and or just smoke fest them. Yeah.
Now, that was fun. But we're going to talk about the thing Brad and I actually like the most.
Whoop.
Yeah. So inside of Qamara, there are, we've got the Cabals, the Witches, and the Covens. Those are like your main factions. But there's a whole nother section of, you know, Drukhari. I'm not doing Beastmen, by the way. They're just, I'll do it real quick.
They're considered cults.
Well, yeah, they're part of the witch cults. They're these guys who have Beastmen. No, you know what? Let's have some fun. Before we get into this.
The Beastmasters?
No. Razorwing Flocks.
Oh, Jesus.
I just want people to know.
How big of a problem they were?
Drukhari are... hold in my mind the greatest broken army ever because, and Brad's got a good story on this, in the beginning of 8th edition, so there's something called Beastmen that exists within Drukhari, and the Beastmen are in charge of what are just, you know, random animals, for lack of a better phrase,
just they're monsters basically.
Monsters, yeah. And one of them were ravens.
Yeah, but mutated crazy ravens.
Mutated crazy ravens. Each model. This is fun. This is because we're both going to enjoy this. Let me set up and you tell the story. So these are, one of them was called a razor wing flock, and it was a pack of birds that had four wounds. I think they were T3, and they could have an invuln. And in the early part of 8th edition, there was no limit on how many of a unit you could take.
So you just took all of them.
And I believe with the Razorwing Flocks, you could have over 100.
Oh, it was more than that.
Maybe 100 to 150 of these four wound models.
That did almost no damage.
Though. They did no damage, but you literally could not kill them. And people would run them as an army and just put them on the table and say, you go. And that was the entire game.
It's so crazy. We had a game. This is when they first came out. It was at the World Championships for teams. Yeah. And we had America versus France. And our guy had brought Razorwing Flocks. And the other guy had brought demons, the smallest demons, Brims, which also costed almost no points. And across from each other was effectively 800 wounds of just these two things. And it was so pointless for them to fight each other that they had run their armies to within an inch of each other. And then just didn't fight because it would take too much time to roll dice that were meaningless. So they did the other stuff that was in the army.
They moved the models around and the game ended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was dumb.
And they, not too many months later, they made a rule change.
Yeah.
Still won.
Wasn't exactly the best.
I think I only had like 15 Razorwing Flocks, I think.
But you needed so many more. Let's go to the cool people.
Let's go to the fun parts. So let's start with the ones who are probably the most badass. And actually, I would argue this is the least cool of the three. So let's start with the Incubi.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Incubi are the mercenary fighters. They, well, let's just be honest who they are. This is the corrupted Striking Scorpion shrine.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, when we covered the Eldar, we talked about Aspect shrines and how Eldar follow a path and the path helps them not fall to the old days of the fall. And each of these paths had a patriarch, matriarch who invented it and led the followers. And each of them, you know, were, you know, this is Jane Zarr, this is Osserman, these are all these groups. One of them, though, fell to the temptations of Slaanesh and had to be killed, sort of.
Well, left.
Yeah, well, that's a thing. They originally thought he was dead. Arhara, A-R-H-R-A, I can't pronounce that, I'm sorry. Anyway.
Well, it's a cool story, becomes Jazar, which isn't actually a name, it's a title.
Yeah, so Ara founded, so the original Striking Scorpions would just hide in shadows and leap out and kill things. They were night lords, they were dark murderers, whatever you want to call them. And I'm not going to spend all the time on the mystery of what happened to him. He becomes, to Brad's point, Drazar.
And Drazar shows up at this Aspect shrine and just says zero words and just starts smoking everybody.
Yeah.
And takes control of the shrine. And the incubi they're supposed to be almost samurai.
Yeah, but the incubi are unique because they're the only Aspect warriors of the Drukhari.
Yes.
And they are...
And it's strict melee.
Yeah, all melee. And they are the greatest melee force probably in the galaxy.
And they're... one of the things... These aren't the guys that turn against you. Incubi...
Yeah, we'll get to them in a second. So the incubi... Let's talk about... I just want to first talk about what it takes to be an incubi because it's kind of cool. So I love the incubi story because the way you become an incubi is they control giant sections of the city. And so the incubi are, everyone wants to be an incubi, not everybody, let me say it better. People who want to be an incubi have to enter these sections of the city. And in order to do that, it's a ripoff of The Running Man, which again, if you haven't seen, yes, go see it. It has Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jim Brown, and Jesse the Body Ventura, and it's actually a very good film.
You know, I'm so happy that you threw that in, because in the notes, he did not say the body, and I was going
to
put that
It's implied. I don't have to type out that much. It is, you can't type Jesse Ventura and not say the body. Yeah. Which, by the way, wasn't even that good of a body. Like, if we're being honest, like a lot of the 80s wrestlers, I'm like, he actually wasn't that jacked, guys. He was fit. You know, but it wasn't that impressive. Anyway, all of these initiates are playing the Running Man, where all they need to kill an incubi. If they can kill an incubi, then
they can be invited into the shrine.
Then they can become an incubi. But the incubi have a similar goal of kill all the initiates. Yeah. And the incubi have the luxury of being an incubi. Yeah.
Also being an incubi armor.
Yeah. So what happens is when initiate... then kills an incubi and they then take their armor and then they're initiated. What's interesting about this is that when you read that, I go, well, wait a minute, how many incubi are there? Because is it a fixed amount or do they actually then go back to the covens and clone them?
That's what I'm saying.
Or clone them and resurrect them.
They field a lot of incubi in the stories and everything.
Yeah.
And almost every Archon worth his salt has an incubi retinue all the time.
Always. Yeah.
So you know, is there 1,000? Is there a billion? I have no idea.
Is there a limited number? So I actually have no idea, but I like the story of that once you've killed incubi, which might be, by the way, barehanded, but you probably just have a sword or something because it's still a dark, everything the Dark City's.
You also have to wonder if yourself, is there like 50 initiates that try to take on the one guy and they finally get him?
And then they probably have to kill each other.
Right. Yeah, oh, for
exactly.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, you're not doing this. What's great, though, is that once they become an incubi, it actually gets even crazier because then they just – it's just nonstop combat and practice.
That's all they do.
Until they get to the last piece, which is they have to go kill an Aspect warrior and take their soul stone, which is just messed up, by the way. So they just basically had to leave, go back into real space, find an Aspect warrior, kill it, take its soul stone – and then they put the soul stone into their helmet, which is a torture device for the soul stone. So every incubi is wearing a helmet that in the helmet has an Eldar soul in it that is being tortured by the helmet.
Which is why their helmet is called a Tormentor helmet.
Tormentor's helmet, yeah. This is, oh, they're so messed up.
Oh, yeah. They're also just dicks.
Oh, yeah. Horrifying things. But that being said, I mean, they can, lore is a little bit difficult, but Incubi, like, witch cults are afraid of the Incubi. Like, everyone's afraid of the
Incubi. Well, they also just don't have a real, or they're not really doing this for the money. They're not, what are you guys just doing?
Yeah. They're just, well, they are, that's right. They're hired off as mercenaries, but not really clear what they get paid with.
Right.
But they are loyal. The thing is, once you've hired
them. That's my thing.
Yeah.
They're the one thing that doesn't turn you. That's why they always hire Incubi retinues, because they are the best way to protect you.
Because the problem with Kamara is basically, like, no one in Kamara is loyal. If you think about it, like, if you want to hire a bodyguard, it's like, great. What are the odds that this bodyguard's actually going to protect me and not murder me? Pretty low. But the Incubi have built a reputation of being the actual bodyguards. And as Brad said earlier, all of the Archons surround themselves with Incubi, because this way they can walk anywhere outside of harm. I mean, didn't work great for all of them. But anyway, a band of Incubi can just instant kill that they see. If you want, you know, the witch cult attack, they're all dead. You know, or if you're in real space marines, they will blend your space marines. And again, on the tabletop, still the ninth they were better.
They're still good.
Yeah, but it was ninth when Drazar gave, like, full rerolls to all of them, and it was just like, oh, so just don't go near those. Yeah, you're auto-dead.
And they should be, because lore-wise, they're super crazy in the lore, because they're just these almost nightmares. We'll get into the real nightmares in a minute. But they're so skilled, and you can't buy them off. You don't know what you have no idea what they want.
I'm not sure if they even speak. That's the thing.
Well, that's the thing. Drazar does not. Well, yep. He's also, there's a reason he doesn't. But but this is just all they do is train, kill, and get new contracts.
Repeat.
Right. Yeah. And it's just scary.
Yeah. But they also, they're not just for defense. They're also for offense. So the same reason they'll also be hired to go kill problematic enemies. If you're on a raid, if you've got a real, like, again, space marine, if you're doing a raid and there's going to be space marines there, you're probably going to bring Incubi, because the Incubi will slaughter them. I'm sorry, wolves. They will. They will. They'll rip through anything. And this is why I love them. And on the tabletop, as we were just saying, they actually are one of the few ones that will do this on occasion.
Rule-wise, yeah, they've been a nightmare.
Yeah, actually, interesting. As much as I pined for eighth, they weren't that good in eighth.
They're still good.
Not like eighth, ninth, though.
No, they weren't.
Ninth, they just they come out of a raid or go like 30 inches. And
right,
like,
and they just get out and they just kill everything they touch.
Yeah, which is what they're supposed to do. It's accurate.
Yes. Nobody's super excited to see Incubi show up.
Yeah, it's really great. Now, from the Incubi, we'll move into what I would call Incubi number three. Number two most awesome are Scourges. For a couple of reasons. One, aesthetically, super cool.
The wings are awesome.
The model looks great. Everything about them, the angulation on them, they're beautiful models. And, you know, they bounce in and out of value on the tabletop. They're kind of good again now.
They're really good right now because they can shoot and scoot, so they can move behind stuff.
And they carry heavy weapons, too.
That's what they're known for.
And they can carry all shredders.
Well, I really like this unit just because all they are is mobile firepower that hires out goes to the highest bidder.
Yeah. These are another big heavy duty mercenaries. They have an interesting history in them. They're actually made by the Fleshcrafters, but they're not made by the Fleshcrafters. Like, they're not captured. They actually choose to be.
Well, this is an augmentation.
Yeah. It's a pretty aggressive one because they have wings.
Yeah.
I mean, like, these are Eldar with wings carrying heavy weapons, and they have their own little mini society within Kamara. They, you know, they live in like the spires above the city. They're almost, and so if you're wandering through like Kamara, again, highly recommend don't visit there, but you'll just get these like shadows that fly over top. Those are oftentimes Scourges. So as we said before, all of the Dark City is built on backstabbing and murder. And this makes, it's an interesting problem this creates, is communication. How do you send a communique as an Archon to your generals? Because if it gets intercepted, now your enemies can use it against you. So they actually use messenger pigeons effectively, but they're scourges. And they just bring letters to each other telling them what to do, which has two pieces of value for the scourges. One, makes them incredibly valuable to the Archons, but also makes no one want to mess with them. Because the concern of them is, since they're seen carrying messages, if you were to kill a scourge, then the scourges might never want to work with you, which means now you can't
communicate. Boy, it's double. You can't communicate, and or, I don't know, you killed one of Vec's messengers, and then Vec just decides that your entire existence, family, and everything you've ever talked to doesn't exist
anymore. Exactly, yeah. So the scourges also get this really nice piece where they're almost an untouchable within Kamara. The next thing about them, though, is that they're also incredible warriors because they carry mostly heavy weapons and they can fly. In the very first episode, for example, we talked about the salamanders attacking the Dark City. The number one reason that they pulled out and left was the scourges.
Yeah, because they hit them with 50 dark lances, immediately.
Consistently couldn't figure out where these things were coming from. These beings were just appearing, shooting dark lances at them. And the salamanders—
It'd just be gone.
Yeah, just it sometimes went, all right, well, we've bombed the city enough. Peace out. I'll be on the tabletop. That's when the scourges, playing against them can kind of suck. I'll be perfectly honest.
Yes, but they really do. They're fairly lore good.
Oh, that's something. They unlock the lore because the truth is they're also still incredibly fragile on the tabletop.
You give them a mean look.
Dead. He's like, oh yeah, the whole squad's dead. Yeah, you had a pistol. Yeah. It's like Indiana Jones style, where he just lines them all up and goes through all of them. But that being said, with the scourges, there's still one more piece of the Dark
City. We're going to talk about my favorite people.
If you don't know about mandrakes, you're about to learn about them and you're going to want to go paint them. And the good news is they have new models.
They're so cool.
The old models are also cool. There's nothing better than mandrakes. So first off, what is a mandrake? It's the coolest model in the game. That's what mandrake is.
Back it up and go, what is in lore? Because in a city of demons or devils, basically, with the worst people ever, they're the boogeyman of the devils.
Now, every resident of the Dark Realm is afraid of the mandrakes.
Yes.
Every resident of real space who's interacted with mandrakes or is aware of their existence is also afraid of mandrakes. So mandrakes, first off, no one knows where they come from. They appear to be a combination of Eldar demon and the warp itself.
They're crazy. You can candyman them up and just make them appear, basically.
Yeah, they are. Well, the other term is their darkness given form. Are they the ultimate fallen Eldar? No one knows. All we know is they seem to be a manifestation of all of the Eldar. And
it's the evil of the Eldar,
though. Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah. And
because they're half in the warp, half not. They are Eldar, but they're basically a dark shadow of Eldar. Yeah. This is why they're so cool.
Yeah, they suck so much on the tabletop, and it's so
yeah. I mean, they're forward to playing. They're used now, at least though. They're forward to playing.
So bad,
but they were the worst thing in the Dark Eldar Codex for 20 plus years.
And in the lore, they're the most powerful thing in the entire Codex.
They give other Dark Eldar nightmares about them.
About what they're going to do. So let's talk what they are. So mandrakes, they literally, when we say they live in the shadows, we don't mean like, ooh, it's a forgotten being that tries to hide. No, they actually live inside the shadows. They can traverse the galaxy through shadow.
Yep.
So if you're an imperial colony and you built the way the Hive cities are built, you know, they have lots of shadows. Mandrakes will just appear through the shadows, and they look badass.
It also don't have rhyme nor reason a lot of times for why they're there.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about what their appearance feels like in a second, but their description, and you can paint, and I have them, they're painted white. So they have like jet black skin with some like dark green runes, or if you're colorblind like black, like Brad, they're jet black.
Never liked you.
Like, what do you mean there's runes? So there's runes. Really?
The white hair, though, is awesome.
And the white hair looks like, what the white hair does is in the lore, the table, and you have to be a really good painter again, but in the lore, the white hair, it's not that it's actually white. It's more just like, it's like a shimmer. And so it creates like a just almost a little bit of contrast as they move around. On the tabletop, they kind of look like Children of the Corn a little bit, so it doesn't work as well. But there's that. The next piece I like about them is that they carry these like jewel encrusted swords that are actually, again, covered in runes. And these swords are impossibly sharp. But the two best parts about them is, first off, they look like they're wearing, well, it looks like it's like a smock or a garment they're wearing of rags.
Oh, you mean the don't look at this very close or you're going to have nightmares about it?
It's made of the flayed skins of anyone who's ever betrayed them. Because that's what the mandrakes are. And by the way, I should mention, they're an independent force. A completely independent force within Commerce. So they're wearing the clothes made from anyone who ever betrayed them. And the other part is one of their hands can actually shoot out energy that will kill or at minimum freeze an enemy in place.
It's not the best gun in the game, but it does devastating wounds, which is good. It does that.
Yeah, it should do way more than that.
Again, in the lore, if you anger the mandrakes, they will hunt you forever until you die. And
the only way you know they're coming, by the way, is all of a sudden the air around you gets very, very cold. And then out of the shadows pops mandrakes. The good and the bad for the Drukhari, and it's good and bad depending on what they're looking for, mandrakes are the greatest hunters in the galaxy. You cannot hide from them unless you want to just place yourself in somewhere that has no shadows. That's the only way to avoid mandrakes. If there is shadow, they can appear. The problem, again, for the Drukhari, as I said, is the good and the bad, is if they want to kill something that you want dead, awesome. If they want to kill you,
not so
less awesome.
But also dead.
Yeah. I mean, there are stories that's happening to Archons where mandrakes join a real space raid and the Archons like, great, I'm glad you guys are here. This is awesome. And then the mandrakes kill that Archon.
Well, almost always the mandrakes have their own reason to join, mm-hmm. which might have absolutely nothing to do. And this is, again, why it's a problem leading these raids, because, oh, yeah, I've got three different factions plus all these independents. And every time I have my perfect plan, did everybody just do whatever the hell they wanted again?
My favorite part, though, about the mandrakes is that if they do kill an Archon or do something, no one does anything about it.
Yeah, they just let it go.
And that includes, by the way, Vect. Vect was killed by mandrakes. He was resurrected and did nothing about it.
Because why?
Well, no, it's because that's in the lore, it's the concern is the belief is because Vect knew that you can't beat the man. Because what are you going to do? Lead a charge into the shadows? Like, how do you go kill something that's literally living in the shadows?
I will tilt versus windmills all day long. You can't stop me.
I don't know if you realize, I have a Don Quixote painting.
Yes,
down here.
I didn't even realize
that's a Don Quixote. That's a painting for Don Quixote. But yeah, I love mandrakes. I've only got 15 of them. And I would
so good.
I love mandrakes. I would run 30 of them happily if they didn't.
They're not innocent. They're four of deployers now. They're finally okay.
No.
Look, man, they were ha ha laughable funny.
They should be borderline incubi, man.
Yes, I agree. However, it's just nice that they're not bad.
It's fine, but they should have jumped. They should have
bananas terrible.
They should be uppy downy. They should have all the things. I mean, everything
additions,
about
they I know,
but
trash.
Everything about their lore makes their rules not line up.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Oh, they're amazing. Oh, all right. But anyway, before we close this out, I want to jump back because we've covered enough of these things. Now it's easier for us to kind of close out a bit more about the arenas that the witches are in. Because we touched on it earlier, but you need to kind of understand all the players that exist within Drukhari to really get a deeper understanding of the arenas.
And they did a good job with this because just like a lot of the Roman society, the arena is the center of a lot of things that come. It's the only place that people come together.
Yeah. And so the arena, the games themselves are crazy. So, because it's much more than witches fighting each other or captured slaves. It includes mandrakes, not often, but they can be there. Incubi, scourges, cabalites, and everything else from the galaxy.
Reaver jetpacks, hellions, every monster, any warrior. Unfortunately, multiple Marines have been thrown into the arena. Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about the arena, though, is that it's not, though, just captured. So the thing is, we talk a lot about, like, when people think about the arenas, if you read the codexes, a lot of times, like, it's the original bit will say one thing, then you read the stories and you find out more later that the arenas, you first think, oh, okay, so the witch cults are fighting in the arenas against, like, the captured slaves. Like they've captured some space marines, they've captured some guardsmen, they've captured
it's not even that often, fight. Though.
It's, yeah, for the most part, the arenas are actually people signing up to fight in them. And I want to talk about the why there is pretty cool. If you're Drukhari, the why is the power from the pain. You can go in there and you're fighting. You are dead center in an arena, killing a witch, or even sometimes it won't even be witches fighting. It might be fighting something else. You get a chance to kill and do all these things. And as Brad was saying, when you do that in real space, you actually you're losing part of your soul while you're doing it. But if you do it in the arena, the power up's better.
And anybody's allowed to fight in this. That's the biggest thing. You can be a nothing in society.
And you can fight your way up. Now, the cooler one to me, though, is the people, is the non-Drukhari who are choosing to fight. And this comes from a very simple thing of going back to the pirate thing. The pirates, the Drukhari, are capturing slaves to bring back, but they're also capturing other things like spaceships, weapons, resources. So the Drukhari are one of, if not the wealthiest races in the entire galaxy. And they've got, so what do they do? All of these things have no intrinsic value to the Drukhari, but they have extrinsic value.
Other people want them.
Very, very much so. And the cabals use this for a few different things. They use this money to pay off individuals within colonies, like lower defenses. They pay off ship captains to lead people into raids. They also will hire mercenaries to create, like, off-world diversions so they can have their raids.
This is one of the biggest things that they do, because they give also what the big thing about this, the Drukhari pay so up 10, 50, 100 times
the going rate.
Who
cares?
That's what I'm saying. They give no shits about it. Yeah. So they're just like, here's a pile of stuff.
Yeah. I have a billion Imperial credits. Well, what do you want to buy with that? I don't know. How about a sandwich? I don't care. Yeah, like, it's just that piece of, like,
who cares?
Yeah. And so one of the big things they do with this money is they put on the kumite. It's what it basically is. And inside these arenas, they hire people to come and fight in the arena. And they did this because one of the problems that Drukhari ran into is some of two things. One, some of their pit fighters got to be too powerful. Where you're talking, especially with succubus, you get succubi who are just so strong that the only people they can defeat are other equally strong succubi. So now you're just sacrificing good warriors.
Well, you could be, especially the one of the most famous, Lilith. Who didn't take drugs because she was going to take things to slow her down because she was so much better than everybody else.
The problem is, Lilith fights an equal succubus. All you doing now is losing a good succubus.
Yep.
And so this becomes kind of vicious. But anyone that the Drukhari could capture obviously isn't a good enough warrior because they would have died. What do we do? Simple. We'll put out, you know, an ad in the galaxy.
I never get this, though, in the lore, because they never really say how they met these people. Like, are you on the deep web, the dark web?
I just view it as it's probably ads. There's probably, like, you know, you're watching, like, you know, you're on your Imperial spaceship and you're talking, you're watching your commercial for Corp Starch or whatever it is. I have to call that out real quick. One of the guys in the Discord asked a question about the space marine ability when they're eating a dead body and getting all their memories. What happens if they eat, like, a Corp Starch sandwich? Do they just get the memories? Yes, it's every bite just the memory of a bunch of people. And that was an amazing take, and good job, buddy. Anyway, but yeah, they're running ads, and so people sign up. So Vect realizes
I can only imagine this is that terrible link that you get, and you're like, I'm going to follow that. This looks like malware for sure.
Let's talk this out. Because I mean, it's not in the lore, but we can have fun with this. People also go to attend the arena.
Yeah.
I think it's televised.
It probably is. There's so many independent.
Yeah, it's got it. I think people watch, it's like when Ultimate Fighting Championship came out, because I'm old enough for this. It was on VHS. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you like Ultimate Fighting, it's about, I think, 1995, mm-hmm. 94, somewhere in that realm. Ultimate Fighting Championship 1 comes out, and you're borrowing the VHS tape from your buddies. That's what this was. And then people were like, I want to go fight the guy in the silly in the uniform. who's this? What's a gi? I don't care. And man, all I'm going to say is Keith Hackney. Don't fight Keith Hackney. A friend of mine described Keith Hackney as someone you don't want to fight in the backseat of a Buick. Anyway, but that's what it was. So they put out these ads, in my opinion, all over the galaxy. And the galaxy is full of independent operators, like Eldar we talked about. They become the Corsairs, which are effectively pilots. The Imperium's got nonstop people, not just the rogue traders, and people trying to make their fortune elsewhere. Even I firmly believe there's Tau who are like, yeah, I'm done with this greater good thing, and bailed, right? So they're all floating all around there. Or my personal favorite, is there anything in the galaxy you can think of that likes to fight and shiny cool things?
Orc.
There are numerous free Buddhas who show up and fight in the arena over the years because it's the greatest thing ever. I'm surprised Gaz hasn't appeared in the arena at some point.
I don't think they'd let him.
Oh, they totally let him, and they just wouldn't fight him. But yeah, that's Gaz, and that's him fighting a bunch of not Drukhari.
Also, you'd just be like, oh, I accidentally made a wog happen. Sorry.
Yeah, he's like, can we teleport him out? And so the arena fights get to be incredible because, as Brad was saying, the Drukhari don't care about the wealth. They could have hey, I've got this. I have a space marine starship. I don't want to do anything with it. Does anyone want it? And it's like,
it's legitimately sitting in the backyard.
It's in the backyard, mint condition. And someone's like, I want it. All right, just go in this arena and kill all of those people and you can have it.
Be fun.
Yeah.
And you get a spaceship.
Yeah.
You're like, okay. What?
And by the way, the Drukhari do hold their word. If you come and you fight in the arena and you don't die, they don't then stab you in the back on your way out, because the thing is, they want you to come back. They want more people to do this. It's the granted safe passage in and out. But the part I like a lot more, it's not just people coming to fight. It's also people coming to watch. And there are numerous stories of rogue traders being in the audience.
Well, the best part is they want something, and it might not be credits.
Oh, you didn't give money to get in here.
Right.
You probably did something horrible.
You probably brought some people that are going to have some terrible things happen to them.
There are rumors of members of the Inquisition attending these. So how the hell did they get there?
Yeah.
Probably not Ordo Xenos, if I'm being honest.
They are tracking down leads.
Yeah, it's Ordo Malleus going into this thing and being like, I'm just not going to tell the guys in Ordo Xenos I was here.
Yeah, that seems bad.
Yeah, and these battles within the arena get epic. As we were just talking about, people, individual fighters coming in, but it's not just an individual fighter or a few fighters. You will have full-blown tens of thousands of combatants waging a campaign inside of these. That's how big these arenas are.
Because they have what is effectively reality-changing engines. They have the holodeck.
Yeah.
In a million seating stadium.
And I love this concept too of the battles. Again, I've been to the Colosseum, so if you haven't, go. It's kind of cool. But the base of the Colosseum is not that big. So you're not just sitting there watching from the stands. These fights actually enter into the stands. So they'll be not just up close and high, they'll actually be next to you in fighting with war walkers, tanks. There'll be titans will be fighting within this thing. But because of the way, as Brad's saying, it's, reality altering effectively, you're also safe. I can sit there in the arena while two titans blast at each other with thermal lances. I'm good. And I just get to enjoy it and laugh. The best part, though, of the arenas are when the arena enters any sort of story within the GW arc. Because every single time it gets awesome. And and I'm just going to kind of drop it there at Yennari.
Yvraine.
Yvraine. And Vec, don't forget. There's two. Because it's also, both of those are arena events. And they're amazing. And we're going to get to them in the future when we kind of dive into that. But with that, we're going to do, it's going to feel like a sudden stop, but just because we got excited and then we kind of ran out of show notes. But I think this has been enough Drukhari for now. As you guys can tell, this is one thing we are a bit more passionate about, so we get a little excited. We didn't really touch on the characters very much. That's because most of the Drukhari characters come up pretty heavily in the Yennari timeline. It's easier to tell the story that way. Otherwise, we end up telling like a piece of the Yennari and having to stop. So I'd rather just run probably a three-episode cast on Yennari and just kind of knock it all out. So with that, we're going to end this. Next week, we're going to do a two-part cast. It's a listener request called Where Are They Now for the Primarchs.
I'm just sad. I thought we were just going to do only 80s rock bands.
Oh, no. I want to have a happy cast. I actually think talking about Lorgar is a happier story than what happened to an 80s one-hit wonder.
Flock of Seagulls, baby.
You had a mullet.
I ran.
Was that their song? I had no idea. Okay. So anyway, next week, two-part cast. We'll probably be the Loyalists and then the Traitors. Spoiler alert, Horus is dead. So that one, I'll save you guys that one ahead of time. Then after that, we're going to do what is currently the most listener requested, Tau. So we're doing Tau in December. It's coming. I promised you all I'd do it. It will be anywhere between 10 minutes and two casts. TBD. Will there be a diatribe about shield drones? Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. John does not like shield drones. It's all PTSD. But anyway, until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
Enjoy your week.